Good morning again, everyone. I trust you had a blessed weekend. I also trust that you found Friday's meditation on Psalm 87 meaningful and moving to worship. I certainly did. Today we will conclude this two-part review of Psalm 87 by letting Scripture be its own commentary, although perhaps with a twist at the end. But first, by way of brief digression, in part one I posed the question, why a psalm to a city, especially a city far away in time and space? Actually, this ought not to seem strange to us. We're all very familiar with national anthems. Every country has one. They are national songs of patriotism, in many cases written as a prayer. And I'm sure that you can identify with a sense of national pride when the South African anthem is sung en masse at a rugby match, or when a South African athlete wins a gold medal at the Olympics. So too, then, is Psalm 87. It is an anthem to Zion. And in the book of the Psalms, there are more of them. Psalm 48, for example. And in Psalm 137, we read that the Babylonians taunted the Israelites by demanding of them to sing one of the songs of Zion, which they felt they could not, such was their gloom in being exiled from their homeland. And was the hymn we listened to last week not anthemic in its structure and arrangement? Fine, you say. An anthem to Zion, then, but what has that got to do with us, Gentiles 9,500 kilometres away? Well, we will frame an answer to that in terms of Zion past, Zion present, and Zion future. Zion past stands for the historical city of Jerusalem and for the nation of Israel. Zion present stands for the New Testament church, comprising Jews and Gentiles, mainly the latter. And Zion future stands for the New Jerusalem described in Revelation and the perfectly united church triumphant. Moving through the psalm then, in verses 1 and 2, Zion is always chosen and established by God himself. The historical city of Zion was established by God. He, for reasons of the sovereign counsel of his will, in love chose Mount Zion, the place where Abraham was to sacrifice Isaac, but a substitute lamb was provided, as especially holy and the seat of his symbolic dwelling with man. He denied David, but permitted Solomon to build the temple there. He alone determined whether it stood or fell against successive armies of nations. He ordained that Jesus, the true Lamb of sacrifice, should die there. God established the present Zion. Jesus says in Matthew 16:18 that he will build his church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. In similar fashion, John Newton exclaims in his hymn, "On the rock of ages founded." And God will establish the future Zion, the new Jerusalem, which is clearly described in Revelation 21 as coming down from heaven from God. What God establishes, no man can put aside. What God purposes, no man can thwart. In Psalm 2, while the nations rage and plot, God declares, "I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill." The context makes clear the reference to Jesus, his son, who will take possession of the ends of the earth. Moving to verse 3 and the title of the glorious hymn we listened to, the psalmist exclaims that glorious things of thee are spoken, O city of God. There are many glorious things spoken of Zion in the Bible. Let's take a look at a few, but you can make a study of many more if you wish. In the first instance, the immediate context of the psalm refers to the grandeur of Jerusalem as a physical city, probably at its zenith in the time of Solomon. Read the first 10 chapters of 2 Chronicles for a detailed description. But one phrase in that passage that stands out as an example, 2 Chronicles 9:27, says that silver was as common as stone in Jerusalem. Secondly, what glorious things are said of Zion present, not the physical city which is currently marred in the era of the Gentiles, but the church. In 1 Peter 2 verse 6, we read of God's glorious declaration about the church built on the rock of ages. He writes, "Behold, I am laying in Zion a stone, a cornerstone chosen and precious, and whoever believes in him will not be put to shame." In Romans 11:26, Paul describes the deliverer coming from Zion to banish ungodliness and to take away sins. And thirdly, what glorious things are spoken of Zion's future? We need only to look at two passages to catch a glimpse of these glorious things. The more obvious vision is set out in Revelation 21, in splendor largely beyond our comparison, but with enough to stimulate our imaginations of something incredibly beautiful, special, and undoubtedly glorious. Then, in Hebrews 12:22, this description: "But you have come to Mount Zion, and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to innumerable angels in festal gathering, and to the assembly of the firstborn, who are enrolled in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant." This is a great link passage to verses 4 to 7 of our psalm. These verses describe peoples who know God himself, who are born of Zion. Moving swiftly through the same framework that we've been using, people who are born in a place are natural citizens of that place, distinct from those who visit and are not citizens, or those who acquire citizenship through time or money. Paul, for example, converses with a tribune in Acts 22 and contrasts his Roman citizenship by birth with that of the tribune who bought his for a large sum. Under the Old Testament covenant, Jews could attend the temple in Zion by virtue of being of Jewish birth. Gentiles were barred unless they were proselytized to becoming Jews. In the New Testament, Jesus ushers in the new covenant in his blood, teaching Nicodemus that we cannot be proselytized into the kingdom of heaven. We have to be born again into it. These are then the ones in verse 4 of Psalm 87 who come to know the living God in the sense of becoming his. This is the power of Christ. He creates a new unity of Jew and Gentile in himself. They come from every nation and tribe under heaven, all redeemed from their sins and given a new robe of righteousness. The proud and arrogant, symbolized by Rahab or Egypt. The worldly and confused, symbolized by Babylon. The wrathful enemies of God, Philistia. The rich and covetous, Tyre. And Cush, representing those far off who have no idea of the living God. He brings them all into Zion, his church, and says of them, "This one and that one were born in her." And God himself is the one recording the names of the people in the book of citizenry. And finally, it is confirmed in Revelation 21, verse 27, that the only ones who will ever enter the new Zion, still to come, are those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. If you know this Lamb, this King, then it is a certainty that you will join the singers and dancers of the last verse of Psalm 87, who say of Zion, "All my springs are in you." What is the spring? The triumphant note on which the psalm ends clearly refers to both Ezekiel 27 and Revelation 22, which tell of the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb. Newton writes of this in his hymn, "See the streams of living water, springing from eternal love. Well, supply thy sons and daughters, and all fear of want remove. Who can faint while such a river ever flows their thirst to assuage? Grace, which like the Lord the giver, never fails from age to age." Do you know this King? If not, hasten to him, and don't stop until you do. He will be found by all who seek him wholeheartedly. And if you do know him, and your name is written in his book of life, then join me to one more time listen to the final verse of John Newton's anthem to Zion.